1320 AM, W248DE, Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. President Trump has signed an executive order keeping TikTok in business in this country.
I had a very good talk with President Xi. I had a lot of respect for him. Hopefully he has a lot of respect for me, too. And we talked about TikTok and other things, but we talked about TikTok, and he gave us the go-ahead.
The agreement will put TikTok under U.S. investors, Vice President J.D. Vance.
It does protect Americans' data security. It ensures TikTok is still accessible. And on this question of the algorithm, which we've heard this a lot, what this deal ensures is that the American entity and the American investors will actually control the algorithm. We don't want this used as a propaganda tool by any foreign government.
CBS's Aaron Navarro.
It'll have American tech company Oracle be the ones to host Americans' user data from TikTok.
Congress passed a law requiring TikTok split from its China-based parent company because of national security concerns. CBS News Special Report, I'm Cammie McCormick.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
For WFHR and WIRI News, I'm Shali Pittman, filling in for Melissa Kay. Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin is pausing abortions in the state because of changes from the federal budget law. Savannah Tomei-Olson has the story.
The new law blocks facilities that provide abortions from receiving payments from Medicaid for 1 year. Stephanie Miller, a spokesperson for Planned Parenthood, says they serve about 50,000 people per year providing all kinds of health care, and three out of every five are covered by Medicaid. At first, a judge said the law could not go into effect, but as the case has moved through the court system, a federal appeals judge is allowing it to move forward. The change goes into effect next Wednesday, October 1st, and that's when Planned Parenthood will pause abortions. Miller says from there they hope to resume services soon once they figure out what to do under this new law. Plus, she says they're working to see as many patients as possible over the next few days. The last time Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin paused abortion services was when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in June 2022, making Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban the law of the land. They resumed abortion services a little over a year later when a Dane County judge ruled that the old law does not apply to consensual abortion. There are only two other clinics that provide the service in the state. They're both in Milwaukee. Data from the Society of Family Planning shows there are about 500 to 600 abortions in Wisconsin every month. I'm Savannah Tomei-Olson.
Nearly a quarter of all 911 calls are for people falling. Joanne Krulatz has more.
A dramatic increase in fall-related emergency medical incidents in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Department of Health Services reports emergency medical services responded to 140,000 falls last year, an increase of nearly 10,000 fall-related calls from 2023. Falls accounted for 21% of all 911-related ambulance runs in 2024.
For WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Shali Pittman.
The Brewers are back in town. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers back to begin their final home series of the regular season against the Reds tomorrow night. The crew with a 3-1 win in San Diego, thanks to an RBI by Bryce Terang and solo home run shot in the ninth by catcher Danny Jansen, originally from Appleton, Wisconsin.
Just feeling more confident at the dish. Got to be on time with a fastball and got a slider kind of inner half maybe. And just put a good swing on it.
College football, the Badgers have a bye week. Up next, they'll face number 19th ranked Michigan in Ann Arbor. Urban Meyer saying on a podcast Wisconsin could not afford to fire head coach Luke Fickell after his contract extension. The Packers play the Cowboys on Sunday night. Micah Parsons asks, how does he think he'll be greeted by the fans in Dallas?
You know, I think Dallas loves me. You know, I think they're going to give me a good round of applause, and there's no hard feelings there, at least for me, and I think it's going to be a great atmosphere. Best football you're going to get in Dallas when it's Sunday night against, you know, a rivalry opponent.
That's Micah Parsons with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 97.5 WFHR.
Tons of sunshine on tap, not only for today, tomorrow, into the weekend, and even for next week, too. High temperatures today and tomorrow hit the mid-70s, then we flirt with 80 degrees for the weekend and next week. Unseasonably warm. Enjoy it. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 75 degrees.
Smokey the Bear.
Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful, it's the least that you can do.
What you desire, don't play with matches, don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Friday, we'll have former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel on to talk about the effort to get trumped up charges against former FBI Director Jim Comey.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
They wish to break the entire thing. That is the objective. It isn't about efficiency. It's about breaking it. And it's about breaking it for what end?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Gerrymandering is bad for everybody.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I'm grossly discouraged, and I have given up on any justice in our system. It doesn't exist anymore.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Justice and hope exists every day on this fine program. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, it is the 5 o'clock hour, and ladies and gentlemen, that means that it is the Civic Media Green and Gold Multi-State, not statewide, multi-state text-to-win contest, where we give away a daily prize of either $200 or gold jewelry, and when you enter, you will also be entered to win our grand prize of 2 club-level indoor, that's the important part, indoor seats to the Green Bay versus Minnesota football game on November 23rd, 2025 at noon, plus a gas card to get you there and back. $1,500 value. You cannot beat that, folks. So you've got to text in the word that I'm about to give you via the Civic Media app. Don't do it the old-fashioned way. Go get that app for free wherever you get your apps from. And the word to win this hour is radio. R-A-D-I-O, as in you are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Good luck to each and every one of you. With that, we're going to get back to our very special programming, this edition of the Maggie Dawn Show, coming to you live from Hilltop Farm here in Spring Green, Wisconsin, where the Reisinger family has raised both animals and crops for over 100 years. We're joined this next half hour by both Brian Reisinger, author of what I think is one of the best encapsulations of the evolution of the American family farm that has been written in quite some time. It's called Land Rich, Cash Poor. I've purchased a whole bunch of copies. I've got it on Audible. I'm probably going to use it as a reference book because there's so much great information in there. Brian's with me, as well as Derek Von Rudin, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Welcome back, Brian, and welcome, Derek. Thank you so much for being here. Before we got on the air, Derek, you were just sharing your family's farming story and the fact that your family's farm is at a pivot point as well. Your son going to be taking over the reins. Tell us a little about you and your family's farming background.
Yeah, and just so make sure it's Darren.
Darren, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Let's get the names right, Maggie. I mean, geez, thank you, Darren.
So I'm third generation organic dairy farmer, and my son in the fourth generation is in that process of buying the cattle and machinery right now, and hopefully by the end of the year we'll have the transaction on the land and buildings taken care of. And it's great to see that next generation, and you know, watching the neighbors and fellow farmers across the country struggle the way they do with just the economics of farming, and being able to hand that down to the next generation, and they have the positive attitude about we want to farm and get that next generation hopefully on the farm down the road too. It's something that really you know, gives you a great feeling that that it's happening. And so it's very frustrating. And graduating high school from in 86 and looking at the farm crisis that happened there. I had two classmates that lost their dads within a couple weeks, our junior year in high school. And so dealing with that, you know, how do you look at it? They're both still farming yet today too, which is, it's good. But, you know, anytime that there's a real steep drop in prices on farm, whether it's dairy or crops or cattle, you always worry about them because you know that there's a family history there. And how do you or can you step in and help too? And, you know, I think some of the previous discussions too are just need to happen more often, actually, because you could tell when people's mindset changes, when their attitudes change, you know, just bodily functions too, once in a while, you notice that they're walking drooped over instead of with strong shoulders. You know, there's so many other indications out there that really give you that sense on something needs to happen. And sometimes it's just a word here that makes a big difference, and let them have that shoulder to lean on. If they need to cry on it too, let them cry on it too. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Darren. And let me just say, congratulations to your family for now entering into the fourth generation and your son taking over your family's great tradition as well. Darren mentioned a bit about this sort of pinch that happens for farming families, Brian, and you wrote about this, I think, very clearly in your book. Explain to folks a little bit about how sometimes the good times aren't all that great, and even the hard times even worse. Farmers get it going and coming. Explain to folks what that's about.
Well, we've been losing farms in this country for more than a century, 45,000 farms a year. And it's because of all kinds of big things, economic crises. We don't understand how they affect the farmer, governmental decisions from both sides of the aisle, technology that moves agriculture forward but needlessly leaves some farmers behind. What all these things boil down to, though, is farmers are in a very odd economic situation where when you have a good crop and you produce a lot and the Lord blesses you with something good in the fall, that means a lot of other farmers might have had a good crop too. And there's a lot of crops on the market.
A lot of supply.
A lot of supply. And we know what happens then, the price goes down. And so farmers are in this position. And then when you flip it around, and if the price is up, it might be because it's been a hard year, weather-wise or anything else, it's wiped out the crop yield that year. So every year, whether the price is good or bad, or whether you had a good crop or a bad crop, all you can do is produce more. And so they say farmers can produce themselves out of prosperity. It's because, not because they want to do that. Yeah. It's because they're in this dilemma where whether you have a good crop or a bad crop, the economics keep on squeezing you. And it's getting worse for all kinds of different reasons, but that is just a situation that farmers have, you know, you're kind of danged if you do, danged if you don't sort of situation. That's a clean way to say it on the radio.
You can say damn, but that's I appreciate your P's and Q's, Brian, very much. Certainly I've wanted to say worse words on the radio and haven't. And that's where the Farmers Union comes in, Darren. It's been around for a long time, but its origin comes from one of those incredible tipping points in the American agricultural past. Tell us a little bit about the founding of the Wisconsin Farmers Union and a little bit about what you folks do.
Yeah, so we were formed back in 1930, so we're celebrating our 95th anniversary this year now. And, you know, really, things haven't changed all that much from our origins. Our forefathers were looking at being squeezed out of business, really from the purchasing side of farms, and formed Farmers Union Central Exchange, which was the products that farmers need to produce the food that we do and grow the crops and all that. And really looking at how there was one or two companies that were really in the business at that time. So forming the cooperative allowed that purchase power within 100 farms instead of one farm to really come together and look at that. And we're still doing that yet today. Still got that struggle. You know, if you look at the antitrust issues that we have in this country today, the Kaper-Volstead Act was formed in 1922, and that's a cooperative mindset there. And how do we continue to work together and be able to help each other out as neighbors and fellow farmers? And we're still fighting to keep that alive today. We have a lobby day in Madison once a year in the spring that we go down and talk about the biggest issues that are out there at that particular point in time. We also go to Washington, D.C. at least once a year. We were just out there a couple weeks ago to hopefully get a farm bill passed, that's not looking like that's going to be too promising at all, because of all the other issues that are facing the economy and the government right now. And it, you know, it's frustrating because it's supposed to be done every 5 years. They're already 2 years behind schedule, and now we're probably going to be another year behind schedule yet. And that's where that uncertainty that, you know, farmers, you know, deal with it pretty good on a daily basis. But when you get too many uncertainties in a row on a regular basis, it really starts to pull at you. And when you see that happening to a generation that is just starting out like my son, you know, it's hard for that generation to accept what's going on today, because sometimes they don't always see that when they're growing up.
Yeah.
People are really good about hiding feelings once in a while. And it's
in Wisconsin, get out of here, Darren. You mentioned consolidation, just a few facts for people. Generally speaking, economists look at about a 40% market share as being the point at which, if you've got one company or a small set of companies that own more than 40% of market share, that they start to be able to exercise price controls and basically anti-free market behaviors. And when you look into the agricultural industry in the United States, the consolidation of all sorts of subsectors within agriculture has been incredibly accelerating. We look at cottonseed. 90% of that market is controlled by four or fewer corporations. Beef processing, 85%. Corn seed, 80%. Soybean crushing, 80%. Fertilizer, 70%. I can go down the entire list, and is simply consolidating. And you mentioned uncertainty, Darren. Brian, in your book, you talk about the farmer as entrepreneur, innovator, someone that has to worry about input costs, labor costs, all of the uncertain weather predictions. It is literally as if the farmer has to do all of the things incredibly well. I do not know any other line of business where you have to be good at everything in order to put food on your family's table and to have some sense of stability. And it's all rooted in this uncertainty. Tell us a little bit about that and how that's impacted the last 20 years in the agricultural industry and the family farmer.
Absolutely. You're so right about all those factors. And what's been happening is for decades now, all these forces have been closing in, and the input costs have been rising, but the market opportunities haven't been keeping up. So sometimes the price for one type of crop or product goes up or it goes down, but it never really keeps pace with the increased costs the farmer has. And the farmer, as you say, is both business owner and laborer. You know, the farmer represents a lot of different parts of our economy all at once, and they have to deal with that squeeze. And so what ends up happening is you have families that generation after generation, they're trying to move forward, and you got moms and dads who are saying, boy, can we hold on and continue to make it? Should I hold on until the day when I tell my family we can't make it anymore? Or do we turn around and sell, which is like losing everything else? Because when your dad or your mom is farming, growing up like I did, it's not only your home, it's your community, it's your way of life, it's your heritage, it's everything. Mm. And so the farmers are in that dilemma of holding on and maybe not making it, or selling and losing everything else.
Gentlemen, what I hear from this, and certainly it came through, Brian, in your book, again, folks, that's Land Rich, Cash Poor, was this sad reality that issues relating the agricultural economy are not, frankly, well understood or well discussed, well analyzed by elected officials on either side of the aisle. There's a great gulf of lack of understanding. It's one of the reasons that I think your book is so powerful, Brian. I think it should be required reading for every member of Congress and every elected official in the state of Wisconsin. I was humbled by it. It pointed out a lot of gaps in my own knowledge, and I thought I was a pretty knowledgeable Wisconsinite. When we come back with, again, folks, we're joined by Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Brian Reisinger of the Reisinger Family Farm, author of Land Rich, Cash Poor. I want to talk about specific policies. Why is it that every 5 years when the farm bill is up, it's all of a sudden, you know, like the elected officials are scurrying. I don't want to actually use the insect word, you know, like when you flip the light on, they don't know what's going on. They can't figure it out. It's oh so complicated. And the power of the mega agribusinesses lobbying arm, what that's doing. what the agenda for the Wisconsin Farmers Union is. We're going to discuss all of that and so much more on the other side. Stay with us for this very special edition of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's a beautiful day, and we're having a great discussion. Keep it locked, folks.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Life insurance. Why are you putting it off? Can't afford it? Too much hassle? Think you don't need it? There's lots of excuses for putting off life insurance. But if you weren't there, who would pay the mortgage and other bills? With Ethos, you could be covered in 10 minutes and boom, family protected. Ethos, fast and easy online term life insurance. Up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam. Some policies as low as $1 a day. Answer a few health questions and get your free quote at ethos.com/music. That's ethos.com/music.
Do you have three ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy three times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-230-2777. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 or 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100 to $200 per month. Big Lou may have a solution for your previous policies as well. You may even save enough money to lighten the load on your new $1 million policy. Remember, call Big Lou. He's like you, except he's only on number two. Call Term Provider at 800-230-2777. That's 800-230-2777. For $1 million in term life insurance that you can live with, call Big Lou at 800-230-2777. 800-230-2777.
And welcome back to our True Crime Podcast. Our guest today is Sean Cleary.
Wait, what? We are supposed to be doing a commercial about Cleary's storage, egg, and sports facilities.
Great point, Sean. It was a warm summer evening in 1978 when a young man with a hammer...
Whoa, again, not a true crime podcast. I want to talk about Cleary designing the building of your dreams.
In a world where things aren't what they seem.
Okay, give me that. Good grief. Visit ClaryBuilding.com today and experience the Cleary difference.
Health officials say close to 1,000 people in Wisconsin die by suicide every year. It's Suicide Prevention Month, and if you are struggling, call 988 anytime for support. A message from the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network at a really special edition of the show for you all today. We're celebrating the Wisconsin farmer, and not just any farmer, the mid-sized, the family farmer, as essential to the health, well-being of everybody in Wisconsin and, frankly, beyond Wisconsin. If you're eating good foods, thank your family farmer. That's what it is about. America has pressed forward in its quest for cheap, 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 and plentiful food, often to the detriment of the family farmer. Kroger and our other major grocers, they get wealthy. Why isn't that wealth being shared with the family farmer? I'm joined for the end of this half hour by Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, as well as Brian Reisinger, author of Land Rich and Cash Poor. I want to get into what's happening here a little bit. Darren, what are some of, to address some of these problems, for example, you know, when we look at the grocery industry, a lot of those major grocery businesses have kept their prices inflated despite the actual input prices and supplier prices of food going down. They're reaping windfalls. How does the Wisconsin Farmers Union address that? What are some of your major policy objectives in the coming years?
Yeah, so certainly want to see, let's implement a program that's going to put some kind of growth management plan in place. So in the dairy industry, we've been talking about this for quite a few years now, trying to get it so that we balance supply and demand. And currently we've been overproducing, and some years not by very much, but in the dairy industry, a 1% too much milk drops farmers' pay prices 25% sometimes. So how can we balance that out in really looking at that? The program we want to see implemented might stop some of this big farm growth. You know, when you're seeing in Western Minnesota, there's 20 and 30,000 cow dairy barns going up. South Dakota, same situation. Kansas actually has one that 65,000 plus cows are going in down there now. And, you know, that's really to the detriment of Wisconsin dairy industry, because the family farmers that we have here, you know, we just can't compete with that. And really looking at something like that. On the crop side, you know, we need to make sure that we can also balance there too. You know, certainly looking at what's going on now with the tariff wars, and soybeans are getting hit really hard and going to be getting hit, you know, harder probably in the next couple months as the crop comes off the fields. What can we do with that? How can we change that? So how do we get a program that's going to be of benefit to the small producers? And yes, certainly it's costing, it costs more for a small farmer to produce stuff than a large farmer. But as you said, when was the last time your grocery prices went down? All those dollars that consumers are spending on food products are going to fewer and fewer people in the middle. And we need to get a system that's going to put more farmers back on the land to make sure that we have the diversity so that we don't have to worry about not having enough food for our nation down the road.
It's really interesting to me. There's so much in what you just said there, Darren, because when you, it tends to sometimes break down on these liberal conservative lines, which don't speak to actually how agricultural economies work at all. And I specifically mean, as you were pointing out, Brian, in the first part of this hour, that, you know, farmers are in this pinch. When you've got big crops, prices go down. And so there has always been a tradition, almost in any country that you look at, but especially in the United States, Canada, here in North America, where there is some management of crop volume and prices to ensure that we have a stable food supply. That is an enormous concern. We saw that coming out of the Great Depression. There was efforts to address that. We see that same problem being highlighted coming out of COVID-19. And yet, it seems to me that the consolidated agribusinesses have this direct line into Washington, D.C. I think you see the results of that every time the farm bill comes up, that the interests of the middle-sized and family farmer aren't being spoken for. Brian, what's your view on the lobbying power of mega agribusiness, and what should we be asking our elected officials to be paying attention to when the farm bill comes back up?
Yeah, it's such a good question. What people should be focused on, what I try to tell people, is don't just ask your elected official, do you support the farmer? Because their hand's going to go up like
right.
that. Every politician's got a vote that they've taken that they can say supports the farmer. The question is, what are you doing to create new economic opportunity for our farmers? That will make your elected officials, whether they're Republican or Democrat, have to think a little bit. They'd have to understand what's going on the farm on the ground. They'd have to understand how that connects to everybody's food supply. Those are things most of our policymakers don't know right now, particularly in Washington.
Yeah.
So, now, where I think that can lead us is to some of these bigger structural changes, because when we talk about one part of the economy or another part of the economy, you know, being subject to a very consolidated industry, here's what's happening. This is happening all across the American economy. Everybody's keeping up with the Joneses. So the food industry is trying to keep up with the rest of the economy. The agribusiness companies are trying to keep up with the food companies. The farmers gotta, on some level, try to keep up with the agribusiness companies. So everybody's getting pushed to get bigger. How do we change that whole dynamic? There's a couple of them, but some of them relate to opportunity. Can we make sure that our technology is scale neutral, meaning that it will be accessible and affordable by farms of all sizes, small and medium as well as large? Make sure we've got fair markets so that farmers, even the bigger ones, are usually the little guys in our economy. You know, everybody has this pressure to get bigger, get out. How do we make sure we have fair markets? And then the consumer is such a huge part, and that brings it back around to the core of your question, which is everybody being conscious of where they get their food from. People care more about that than ever before. And after COVID, they've seen how the national supply chain, the price spiked, the health of the food is an issue. The harder we are on our family farms, the more expensive the food's going to get, the less healthy it's going to get. So how do we figure out a way to change this paradigm and get out of these? I try to give nonpartisan input on this stuff. Get out of these debates that we're stuck in, right versus left, because the solutions need to defy those boundaries if we're going to change things.
Especially when it comes to the small and medium-sized farmer. Darren, can you stick around for a little bit longer? We're going to have to take care of some business here, folks. We also, of course, it is Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold multi-state text to win contest. Folks, if you've been waiting for that word of this hour, it is radio, R-A-D-I-O. Text that in via the Civic Media app to get entered to win two daily prizes and a grand prize, a pair of tickets to Wisconsin, Green Bay specifically, versus Minnesota in November. We're going to come back with Darren, Brian, and Brian's sisters, Malia Reisinger. We're going to talk more about how the family farm will succeed going forward.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 97.5 WFHR.
For WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Shally Pittman, filling in for Melissa Kay. State lawmakers are introducing bills that would change Wisconsin elections, Savannah Tomei Olson reports.
Both Republicans and Democrats have their own proposals, but they introduce them together at a press conference, a rarity here in Wisconsin. Republican Representative Scott Krug from Nakusa presented the Republican plans. His bills include standardizing drop box rules, creating standard early voting hours, and new rules for election observers. One of the most notable among his plans, a bill to allow poll workers to begin processing absentee ballots on the Monday before Election Day. Most states allow that, but Wisconsin does not. A similar bill last year was blocked by Republicans in the state Senate.
This package that I'm looking to introduce this week does take into account a lot of the things that President Trump has said about elections. We need safety, we need security, we need to know who voters are, but we also want to make sure that, you know, we understand that we set the line in Wisconsin, that we have our own election system.
Meanwhile, Democrats' proposals largely focus on increasing voter education and accessibility. Under their plan, high schoolers would get voter registration forms and be allowed to pre-register before they turn 18. Their bills would increase accessibility training for poll workers and mandate that elected officials work a shift as a poll worker so they understand the system. Representative Lee Snodgrass from Appleton.
I have seen time and time again my colleagues making false claims about election security or administration. And as I tell people, there's no better way of learning than doing.
Their plans would also increase protection for clerks, their staff, and poll workers. Krug has signed on as an author of three of the Democrats' bills. Lawmakers made it clear they don't agree on all of these proposals, but they want to work it out in committee like they're supposed to. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson, Civic Media News.
And for WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Shally Pittman.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Jimmy Kimmel made an emotional return to his talk show, Jimmy Kimmel Live, Tuesday night. The host delivered a 17-minute monologue where he still did not hold back against the FCC or the Trump administration, but did clarify he never intended insensitivity toward Erica Kirk or the Kirk kids, even tearing up a bit throughout the monologue after an emotional few days. His biggest line of the night was probably after he played a clip of the president saying Kimmel doesn't have good ratings. When the camera went back to Jimmy, he said, "I do tonight," and the crowd stood and applauded like it did several times throughout the monologue or when he hugged Guillermo. Overall, the night was a big slapback at government overreach, with the host citing support from conservatives like Ben Shapiro, Candace Owens, and Ted Cruz. Even Joe Rogan, not so courageously, backed Kimmel after finally feeling it was safe to do so. It will be interesting to see how long the love lasts. But for now, Jimmy Kimmel is happy to be back. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A clear sky tonight, lows in the low 50s. With sunshine for tomorrow, beautiful day, a high in the low 70s. Upper 70s for the high Saturday with sun. Staying dry with more sunshine for Sunday, highs stay in the 70s. Currently at 75 degrees.
You wanted to be cool, which led you to smoking, which led to a pack a day. Then you met that special someone, which led to starting a life with them, which led to wanting to live longer, which led to quitting. Then you heard you may be at risk for lung cancer, which led you to getting a low-dose CT scan. If you smoked, get scanned. Talk to your doctor and learn more at savedbythescan.org. brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
I'll trust water bottles and a flashlight to save the day, but I'll be proved wrong.
With a tornado approaching, I'll realize that I lack a wheelchair-accessible shelter.
When the floodwaters rise, I'll be up in the attic with 20 cans of beans. It's a recipe for disaster.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
Fresh off her announcement that she's running for governor, we have State Representative Francesca Hong. Hear what she has to say.
Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got, I'm going to just say, probably one of my most favorite shows that I've done this entire year. It's such a privilege and honor to be here at the Hilltop Farm in Spring Green, Wisconsin, at the Reisinger Family Farm, where the Reisinger family for over 100 years has raised animals and crops in the beautiful hills of Stark County. Got to have an amazing drive from Milwaukee here to their farm today, driving my city blues away into the rolling hills of Sauk County, relaxing all the way. I'm joined now for this next half hour, also again by Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Brian Reisinger, author of Land Rich, Cash Poor, and now Brian's sister, Malia Reisinger, who's taken over the reins of the family farm. Of course, if you missed it when I introduced folks before, we're here not just to celebrate the Wisconsin family farm, but also to celebrate the 49th wedding anniversary of the matriarch and patriarch of the Hilltop Farm, Gene and Jim Reisinger. Happy 49th anniversary. Before the break, Darren, we were talking a little bit about the economics, the evolution of agricultural economics in this country. The fact, we were talking with Brian about the fact that most legislators, especially in the Beltway on Capitol Hill, basically don't know squat about the farm bill or farming, and that every 5 years when the farm bill comes up, it's a bunch of scurrying about and they don't really talk about it. But I wanted to ask you, there's a couple of programs that have been working really well for the medium-sized and family farm, and there's been some, I would say, pulling back of the funding of some of these essential programs that have helped family farms move forward. Tell us a little bit about the Local Food Purchase Assistance Program and other programs that have been working well.
Yeah, so the Local Food Purchase Assistance Program actually started because of COVID. The Biden administration and through the USDA put together some dollars to get out there and trying to directly connect the consumer and farmer, or a lot more directly than we are. The one stat that just drives me nuts is every piece of food that we eat might travel about 15,000 or 1,500 miles between the farmer and the consumer.
I was a kid, it was 15 feet from my mom's garden into the kitchen. Yeah, 1,500 makes me very uncomfortable.
Yes, and the Local Foods Purchasing Assistance Program was trying to cut that down. And here in the state of Wisconsin, through that program, 289 farmers, I think, benefited from that. Most of that food traveled less than 100 miles. You always have some that just doesn't get produced in certain areas, and you got to get beyond that. But when you can get down to that number, that means that that farmer consumer are more directly impacting what's happening in that community. Those funds got erased this spring by President Trump. He used his pen and said no more for the LFPA program. So all those farmers that were planning on those contracts this year, they had contracts already signed, should have been getting those dollars to make that happen. So it impacted not only the farmer, but also the food banks and the food systems within that network all of a sudden had to figure out how are we going to be able to keep that system alive. They have somewhat, there's some state dollars that are being put into that too. Thank you to our state legislators for making that happen. But it's not what it was. And so how do we get to a point where farmers of the small scale especially can use that type of a marketing system to get the food to the consumer. You know, we're getting into this consolidation we talked about earlier, right, that there's fewer and fewer people to sell our products to. This actually opened it up and made it where there's more people to buy from directly from the farmer. And so that network needs to be built, and it should be built in every state around the country. We see the Dakotas and the Great Plains as corn and soybeans, or wheat, corn and soybeans. They've got adequate land out there to grow fruits and vegetables just like we do here in the state of Wisconsin. But the market says, no, you're not going to. You're just going to do corn and soybeans or wheat and, you know, rotate, things like that. The idea is, let's make that example work, but you do need help to get it started too. It's not that you can go and do it for nothing.
Right.
It takes money.
Takes some infrastructure. Folks, again, call your local elected officials, folks in our state legislature, governor's office. Tell them to continue the support of the Wisconsin Local Food Purchase Assistance Program. I also just want to note, you can find out more about the Wisconsin Farmers Union at wisconsinfarmersunion.com. They also help support the Wisconsin Local Food Directory, which is a platform designed to connect farmers with a growing network of food security programs and community members who care about good food, because it shouldn't just be bougie people who go to restaurants with farm-to-table food. It should be everybody that has access to locally grown good food. Brian, before we say goodbye to Darren, I wanted to ask both of you, what do you think is needed to ensure the short-term and long-term stability of family farms here in the United States? Let's start with you, Brian.
Short term is, we do need our policymakers to provide some stability to the industry by passing a five-year farm bill. And that sounds like a long-term thing, but it's actually something they're supposed to be doing the last couple of years, and yeah, they keep kicking the can down the road with a short patch. We need them to roll up their sleeves and get a farm bill passed this year that allows not only farmers, but people who, private sector lenders, everybody else. You know, it can be harder for a farmer to get a loan even if they don't want to access a government program. It's harder to get a loan if the farm bill isn't passed and extending up for 5 years, because those bankers say, well, I don't know what the industry is going to be like. So we need that farm bill between now and the end of the year. Long term, we need farm bills that not only are passed on time and give us a five-year trajectory, but we need farm bills that take a look at all of the government programs that we've been piling up for decades. You know, anybody inside farming, outside farming, right, left, I encounter all of them. They all are pissed off about something with our farm programs. Here's why. Because we've been piling program after program for decades without looking and seeing what's working. So we have programs that aren't working anymore in some cases, and some are. We got some that are contradictory. We got some that have become prone to favoritism and abuse. So I've been saying we need a bipartisan family farm moonshot where we look at all of these programs and we go one by one. If it's working,
keep it.
Move it forward. Yeah. If it's not, reform it or get rid of it, because there's such lack of clarity on what's going on, and it makes it harder and harder to actually get something done. So that's my hope for the long term.
You touched on something, Brian, that I harp on probably to the level that ticks off some of my regular listeners. And it's talking about policies from a lens that what is actually working, and fearlessly looking at that regardless of political party. What are the goals that we want to see? I don't think anybody in this country or any elected official would be stupid enough to say, well, we don't want any more family farmers. That would be a death knell for the health of this country. If you're a MAHA supporter, you want to be in support of family farms. That means a comprehensive look at the farm bill. Darren, any last thoughts about what is needed to help support Wisconsin family farms?
We got to get back to a system that actually takes the consumer dollar and puts it in the farmer's pocket. Mm. Right now, too many farmers are getting a government check that keeps them in business. And we can get back to that. We just got to get rid of that thread that's there between the multinational corporations and the large companies in this country that have an automatic backdoor to our elected officials to make sure that they continue to get those savior checks or the government check that comes. We got to get back to a system that puts the consumer and farmer more in direct connection. And that can happen really fast if our elected officials in D.C. want to make that happen.
Thank you so much, folks. That was Derek Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. You can find out all about their policy platform, their advocacy on behalf of Wisconsin's medium and family-sized farms by going to WisconsinFarmersUnion.com. That connection with farmers is one of the reasons I'm so excited to share this next bit of our half hour with Malia Reisinger, the heir to the Reisinger farming legacy here. Welcome, Malia. It's so great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
It was great to talk with you before, and I know we talked about a couple of these stories the last time you were on my show, but as a woman in a man's world, and I don't know anything about that as an economist. No. As a woman in a man's world, tell us a little bit about what it was like working with your dad to build the capacity for him to feel comfortable with that transition, and then some of those, you know, I'm just going to call them little awkward moments when gentlemen talk right past you because they think you're not actually here at the table to make any decisions.
Yeah, I will say, especially with my dad, it was never a woman in the man's world. He was always just like, yeah, you can figure out how to do it. So it was never one of those like, oh, you're just a woman, you shouldn't do that.
Jim, you're going to get an extra hug for that from me.
But I do feel like maybe more so with prior generations, even to him, that change was hard and seeing something different, where like when we tore out the freestalls, it was like, but this isn't what it was. I want my freestalls because that's changing it. But being able to see the cows back in the area in the same group, even though they were smaller, it definitely makes it feel just like it's the barn. Yeah. Let's see.
Tell us one of the stories, like when you've gone with your dad into whether it's get some parts to repair a piece of farm equipment, work out a supplier relationship for fertilizer, whatever it may be.
Probably the hardest one for me was buying seed. I have a few reps that are phenomenal. They will talk to me. They're great. There was one that 1 year he came and we sat down and talked about it. And he was like, he wouldn't talk or answer my questions. So dad would have to repeat the questions to him. And then the next year he came in the yard and dad said, well, you can go get her card and ask her when to set up a meeting. And he drove out of the yard. And I was like, well, I guess you don't need me.
Get out of here.
Nope. So he has not been back, and we don't buy seed from that.
Girl, you let me know if he shows back up, because I'll help bring the throwdown with you. Because
I was like, whatever.
He's going to throw away good money just because he doesn't want to deal with a woman. I call that just bad business.
Yeah, but I've come to a point where, you know what? There's somebody else who'll come in who'll be more than happy to work with me. So,
indeed.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Don't need you.
Yes.
Malia, much respect. I really, really admire and appreciate what you and your family are doing here. And I wanted to use that moment, the support of both your parents, Gene and Jim, their confidence in you. And Brian, we were talking a little bit before the break about the fact that there would be not a single family farm left remaining in this country absent women's role and the support of women in the farming community. Tell us a little bit about what your research told you.
This was one of the parts where my family history that I knew something about all of a sudden clicked for me, as far as something I realized that the entire country experienced, which is the tradition of really farmland feminism that was lost to history. And what I mean by that is my sister is carrying on a proud tradition from my mom, my grandma, our great grandmother, doing the work of a man alongside their husband. When you were in early 1900s, Wisconsin, my great grandmother, Teresa Reisinger, was doing the work of a man alongside of her husband. And it was a trailblazing situation. And what happened is a lot of our economy shifted from rural to urban, and we forgot these things. So we had women trailblazers in medicine, in corporate America, all these places. Meanwhile, the women on the farm were just trying to survive, and they weren't telling their story.
They're working.
That's right. And it was those women who showed what could be done in the Rosie the Riveter years of World War II and beyond. So it's something that people forgot about, but women have been blazing trails in rural America for more than 100 years, and I'm so incredibly proud that my sister's doing that.
Absolutely. The first state to give women the right to vote, remember, folks, was Wyoming. Why? Because women were out there doing the work. Here's to Malia Reisinger doing the work, continuing on her family's amazing tradition. Brian's going to stick around with me for the last segment of the day. You're not going to want to miss it. We're going to talk about the future of the Reisinger farm and family farms across this great nation. Thanks for being with us for this special edition of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. We're going to be cheersing to the 49 years of marriage between Jim and Jean Reisinger. We'll be right back.
Connect.
connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Maine voters decide November 4th whether adding more ID and mail-in voting restrictions for most voters justifies preventing almost non-existent voter fraud. Question 1 tightens voter ID requirements and adds hurdles for mail-in voters, including the elderly and disabled, despite only 2 voter fraud convictions since 1982. About half of Maine's over 842,000 2024 voters used a mail-in ballot, and over 16,000 subscribed to an ongoing absentee voter list, according to the state's September 2025 figures. If approved, Question 1 would eliminate the absentee list and prohibit requesting an absentee application by phone. It also prohibits third parties from delivering absentee ballot applications, including family members, and limits drop boxes. Maine's population is the oldest in the U.S., with 21.8% of residents over 65. Question 1 also narrows Maine's voter ID options, eliminating student IDs, tribal IDs, and other currently acceptable documents, despite no evidence of abuse. At almost 75%, Maine consistently has one of the highest voter turnouts in the country, and the Heritage Foundation's own figures show just 2 convictions for voter fraud in over 40 years. We have the text of Question 1 at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Get ready to go for the green and gold on this local Civic Media radio station. Listen each weekday for the keywords to text for your chance to win our daily prize, $200 cash and gold jewelry. And be entered to win our grand prize, 2 indoor club level seats to see the green and gold take on Minnesota in Green Bay. Just download our free Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 9, 11, 1, 3, 5, and 7 for your chance to win in our multi-state contest. For complete rules, go to civicmedia.us.
My name is Chuck Collins. I'm the great-grandson of the meatpacker Oscar Mayer and a member of the Patriotic Millionaires, a collection of wealthy Americans who share a profound concern about the dangers of concentrated wealth and power in America. Now, the fact is, you may not care how much money another person has, but you likely do care how much power another person has, especially if they're using that power to rig the rules of the economy to make themselves richer and you poorer. You see, there is a point where money is no longer money, it's power. And when rich people use their money to drown out the voices of everyday people, it threatens the safety and security of us all. Patriotic millionaires don't want to live in a country with a few extremely rich people controlling everything, leaving millions of people struggling to just get by. Luckily, we have a solution. Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. I'm Chuck Collins. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a very special episode of the Maggie Dawn Show here at the Reisinger Family Farm, where they have raised animals and agricultural products for over 100 years. We are celebrating Jim and Jean's Reisinger's 49th wedding anniversary. I cannot believe. Big thanks to the entire Civic Media crew, Jamie Martinson, my senior producer, and the Reisinger family for welcoming us all into their farm, into their home, and their family to share in this momentous day. Can't believe we were able to do a live radio show on their anniversary. So exciting. And if that wasn't enough, you can also win some things here at Civic Media. It is Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold multi-state text to win contest. You got just a few minutes before the 6 o'clock hour hits. You want to get in this word to win via text messages, via the app as soon as you can before 6 p.m. The word to win this hour is radio, R-A-D-I-O. That'll get you entered to win $200 cash or gold jewelry. That's a daily prize. And it'll also get you entered to win one grand prize, 2 club-level indoor seats to Green Bay versus Minnesota on November 23rd, plus a gas card to get you to the game for $1,500. Who doesn't want that? I also want to give some thanks to all of my great guests today. Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union, Brenda Stotz and Dorothy Harms, as well as Christy Updike of the Wisconsin Farmer Angel Network. Any of the items and resources that we talked about today will be available in our show notes following this program. Brian, you're with me for this last segment. First of all, I want to get in. You're going to be in Wausau talking about your book. Is that tomorrow?
That's right. That's tomorrow. We're going to be in Wausau talking at Timekeeper Distillery at 5:15 p.m. That's at 720 Grant Street, and it's for the Central Wisconsin Book Festival. And I find that we get book lovers, we get farm families, we get everybody in between. So I'm very excited about that, and it's a great chance to get out there. Our new edition of Land Rich Cash Poor paperback edition came out this month. It's in bookstores. It's on Amazon. But I love best getting into local communities like Wausau tomorrow.
Congrats on the paperback. And you're telling me we got a distillery with booze, a bunch of amazing farmers and people that like books. Maybe I'm making a drive up to Wausau tomorrow, Brian. I don't know. We wanted to close out this hour talking a little bit about the future of farming in America, especially the family farm. But I really wanted to get at what I think is the underlying theme of your book. And that is that the future and the wellness, the welfare, our general welfare here in the state of Wisconsin and America, we all need the family farm to continue to thrive and to succeed. It is essential for all of us. I don't care if you live on the island of Manhattan with 8 million people, you need the family farm. Our futures are tied together. Tell us a little bit about how you came to that. I think it comes through in every chapter of your book, Brian. How do you make that real? How do you get people to understand that we are in this together?
Well, I was shocked by the level to which that's true. I knew our farms were disappearing since I was a little kid. I knew it was having an impact. As I investigated the issue, here's what it boils down to. We've been losing farms at a rate of 45,000 a year for the past century. If we continue to lose farms at the rate of 45,000 a year for going forward like we have for the past century, I'm 40 years old now. By the time my little girl, who's 1.5, is my age, we'll have lost the rest of the farms in this country. That's not an exaggeration. If we lose farms at the same rate going forward that we have in the past, the rest of our farms in this country will be gone. And, you know, I had somebody said to me earlier, you know, you worry about what it's like to depend on foreign oil. Imagine what it's like to be depending on foreign food. And we have our food prices going up. The health of it is becoming a concern for a lot of people. All of these things that affect every single family are being made worse because we're wiping out our family farms that are our food supply. And I also want to say, I thank you so much for shedding light on these issues. Growing up, hearing about our farms disappearing, my dad in the barn, we always listened to your guys' station in Richland Center. Guys like Phil Nee, people like that, who people hear in their communities. We need good information out there to keep these conversations going. And you guys are in communities like that as well as talking statewide, and it's so important.
Well, I'm just so privileged and humble to be here. My tagline on the show is, it's always better when we stand together. And that I feel is so intensely true when it comes to the family farm and our futures. I don't want to have to buy food from a foreign government. I want to buy food from the family farm down the street. And the fact that we pay more in many ways for food now that makes us less healthy tells us something about the health of the family farm and our health. Yeah. Those things are inextricably intertwined. We are in this struggle together. Our futures will rise or fall together, and we must survive and thrive together. The alternative is simply unthinkable. So with that, and everybody that's here at the farm with me, Brian, I'm going to cheers to your paperback. I'm going to cheers to Jim and Jean Reisinger. Thank you for your service to the state of Wisconsin. Thank you to the Farmers Angel Network. Thank you to the Wisconsin Farmers Union. We are all better in the state because all of you are here. Brian, we're all getting smarter because of your book. It is truly an honor and privilege to be here. So everyone, if you'll join me in a cheers to Jim and Jean, all of the best to you and your family. Congratulations on 49 amazing years together. We're going to take a sip of our apple cider here together. Delicious. And with our remaining minute, I'm going to invite all of you to join in our celebration by, of course, texting in our word to win and our text to win multi-state contest so that you can celebrate, you know, a $200, maybe some gold jewelry or a pair of tickets to Green Bay versus Minnesota on November 23rd. You've got just a couple minutes to get that in. Again, the word to win this hour is radio, R-A-D-I-O. Thanks again to all the amazing crew from Civic Media making this happen. And most especially, thank you to every single family farmer in Wisconsin. We need you. We love you. We respect you. And we're going to be here for you. Folks, thanks for being with me. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together for our family farms.
Is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. President Trump signed an executive order today declaring a proposed deal meets national security concerns about TikTok.
The agreement that will save TikTok and ensure that it can operate safely and securely.
President Trump talked to China's president beforehand.
This is going to be American operated all the way, and great respect for President Xi, and I very much appreciate that he approved the deal, because to get it done properly, we really needed the support of China and the approval of China.
Vice President J.D. Vance.
We wanted to keep TikTok operating, but we also wanted to make sure that we protected Americans' data privacy as required by law, both because it's the right thing to do, but also because it's a legal requirement of the law that was passed last year by Congress.
Tech contributor Insure.
The app is here to stay, and it's less likely to be banned in the future because there are American interests in it.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Cammie McCormick.